Hi again, everybody, and welcome to Airman's Podcast, episode 134. It's Tuesday, December 16th, 2008. Well, today is our last Politicast for the year. We'll be back again in January, of course. But joining me today to sort of wrap things up for this year is, of course, my co-host, Jason.
Hi, everybody. So our last one, it means the campaign is all over and no one's vying for any Senate seats. They're trying to buy them. But
well, I don't know. There's one in Michigan that's still not sorted yet. I mean, Minnesota. God, Michigan.
Minnesota. One, it's one of those states that start with an M and get a lot of snow.
Yeah, somewhere up there, cold.
How long have you not been in the country? Oh, my goodness.
I meant Minnesota.
Chalk it up to being tired. Well, of course you meant Minnesota.
I am very tired. I don't know why I'm so tired. Oh, except for starting the Wii Fit yesterday. So that could be it, I suppose. Well, it's still a very busy time. With the, wrapping up the loose ends. Caroline Kennedy apparently does want to be Hillary Clinton's replacement. And George Stephanopoulos was saying on ABC that Hillary's not very happy about that because, of course, Caroline endorsed Barack Obama early on. So, but we'll see about that. And, of course, nobody has any idea what's going to happen to fill Barack Obama's seat. Illinois Governor...
Is there some controversy over that?
Yeah, just a wee one. But
see, I was thinking of saying that he could have my house.
Why? Who he?
Well, then I could be appointed senator.
Oh, okay.
You know, I mean, granted that the market's probably tanked and he can't get as much as he might have under normal circumstances, but I think I'm well qualified to serve, you know.
Well, as qualified as some of the people he was probably looking at, I don't know.
Yeah, that's, you know, so...
Well, the Illinois House Speaker, of course, has started impeachment proceedings against Blagojevich. And his daughter, Lisa Madigan, who's the Attorney General, has asked the Supreme Court essentially to remove Blagojevich from office as being unable to be governor, what it amounts to.
Right.
And but one way or another, he will not be appointing the next senator from Illinois, no matter what happens, because if he were to try to appoint somebody, there's a number of different ways that could be averted.
Oh, yeah, it's like the State Board of Elections doesn't have to accept it. Then there's something else. There are at least three levels of things at the state level, and then the Senate can just not recognize him.
Which is likely. Yeah, because the Democratic caucus has already said that they won't recognize anyone appointed by Blagojevich, and obviously the Republicans wouldn't. So it's obvious that there's nothing he can do now.
Right.
He should just resign and save everybody
the
time and trouble and money and all that. But he seems to be too stubborn to do that, I guess.
No, he's too stupid.
Well,
I read some of these transcripts about, he's going to be running for president. It's just like, what fantasy alternate parallel universe are you involved in? Is this like a Dark Shadows episode or something? And parallel time or something? And just like, you know...
Yeah, I did. I saw that, too, and I thought to myself, excuse me? President of what?
You know, what's in that can of hairspray that you use?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yes. It's mildly entertaining on a certain level. I mean, if you put aside all the seriousness of it, and it is very serious, and I don't want to make light of that at all, but I mean... Quite frankly, it is something that, as Illinoisans, we're sort of used to seeing. I mean, corrupt politicians are a dime a dozen in Illinois. Although he does sort of raise it to an entirely new level.
Yes.
I pointed out on Archer's show that Dan Walker was sent to prison not for what he did as governor, but for what he did after he was governor.
Right.
And
it's like investment fraud or tax manipulation or something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember anymore. And, of course... what the hell? I totally forgot his name all of a sudden. Just went out of my head. Paul, what's his name? Paul Powell, the Secretary of State who left behind all those millions in shoeboxes.
It was only $300,000, but
Wikipedia says $800,000.
Oh, well, whatever. Well, you know, Wikipedia is always right.
Yeah, well, that's actually an issue in itself, and maybe sometime we can talk about that because I find it fascinating.
Where were we? Oh, yes, selling Senate seats.
Yes.
Well, it is a sad thing. They had an interesting, I don't remember where I saw this, but they sort of the Hall of Shame and where people ended up. You know, Ryan's still in prison. Kerner died and Walker got released early because of health issues and now is retired and writes mystery novels or something.
Does he?
He lives in Mexico.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
I think this was probably on CNN's site or USA Today's, one of those. So that was kind of like the hall of, you know, and where they ended up and what happened to them and stuff like that. So it is sort of sad because everyone just kind of rolls their eyes and goes, yeah, well, are we really surprised? And it's unfortunate. And of course, the Republicans are trying desperately to tie Obama. It's like, well, would he have had discussions with the governor? It's like, would it not make perfect and total sense, maybe not Obama directly, but certainly someone on his staff to discuss with someone on, however you pronounce the guy's name,
Blagojevich.
Blagojevich's staff about who Obama would like to see appointed.
Or who he might object to, even.
Right. This interaction is just like, this going to happen all the time.
It's the same smear politics that the Republicans did in the campaign. They're trying to do this guilt by association thing. They're trying to say that because somebody on Obama's staff talked to Blagojevich at some stage, therefore, it means that they were in on it. Well, no, it means nothing of the kind. All it means is they were talking to the governor's staff, probably. And right. Obama said today
it would be probably unrealistic to think that
absolutely
they would be talking to the governor.
It's a governor who's going to be appointing his successor. You know,
right?
So, I mean, I would be shocked to find out that there hadn't been any discussions whatsoever. That's not the same thing as saying that they were in on Blagojevich's scheming.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, leave it to the Republicans. They've already started running attack ads in Illinois.
It's always good to have a hobby, I guess.
Well, they don't seem to be able to do anything else but smear and lie and distort and whatnot.
God shoes.
I had hoped that this was going to end with a campaign once the election was over. You know, I'd really hoped that they'd learned their lesson, that the politics of sleaze and innuendo just don't play anymore. But they just don't seem to have gotten it. If anything, it seems to be getting worse. I mean, with the way that the fundamentalists are tripping all over themselves, claiming that they're the victims all of a sudden.
They had a discussion. It was about the taking Christ out of Christmas and stuff like this. And when you an article, I'm not exactly sure. Well, what one of the articles was completely about, but I remember reading the comments, and there was also this. The new in mega church guy, Warren, what is his name? Warren.
Yeah.
And his wife wrote a piece on the Post site about how suddenly she's they're concerned about AIDS, you know, and it's some people's reactions like, where have you been for a quarter of a century? You know, it's like, oh, it was affecting children. And I don't particularly want to go into that because we can at some other point because I have a lot of notions on that. But what I'm struck by on both sort of the comments level is the almost childness, you know, way in which people comment. You know, it's this opening salvo of, well, you know, anybody who believes in God, you know, this is just superstition and blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, and you're going to win friends and influence people by saying somebody's a stupid idiot, exactly how. And then, you know, the right comes back. It's like, well, you know, you don't believe in God, you have no morals. And it's like the whole tone, you know, some of the stuff about, you know, where the line of religion is or isn't in the public square is an important subject, but yet we get into this sort of, I'm rubber, you're glue, or your mother wears army boots in some of the comments. I mean, it's just so childish.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you don't, insulting people, so you preach to the choir. I understand it. And some of the comments about the Attorney General in California launching the investigation into how the Mormons gave money to the Proposition 8, right? And this is obviously the liberal government of California, and somebody responded and says, well, someone has filed the complaint. Yeah. Has gone through the process of filing a complaint, and they have to respond to the complaint.
Yeah.
You know, that's how the legal system works.
Yeah.
And it's, I think, extremely sort of disingenuous for the Mormons to be, you know, sort of calling foul when they were some of the major fundraisers.
Absolutely.
You know, for the proposition, you know, they suddenly they don't want to take credit because people are protesting against them. And it's, you know, well, you sort of brought this on them. They sort of brought it on themselves, because there was an article in the Post, not, you know, when sort of the first wave of protests, and it's like, well, you know, we just really don't know what to make of this. It's like, well, you put yourself forward. You sought out people to, you know, told your followers, your flock, to raise money and oppose this, or promote it, I guess. I'm sorry. Then you have to expect that there's going to be some sort of a reaction. Now, whether or not it's legal or not, I don't have any.
What, having the, sort of the reaction? You mean?
No. The raising of money.
Oh yeah.
Or the way in which, because I read, I mean, I think it was in the Post, you know, sort of a paragraph from someone says, well, you can look at it this way, and it's not legal. And I said, oh, that seems pretty sound. And then they had somebody else who says, or you can look at it this way, and it's legal. And I kind of went, well, yeah, that's some sound points, too. Obviously, this is going to is beyond my understanding of what the law is and how it is interpreted, because both points were like, okay, if you look at it in this light, then it's, yes, what they violated the law. But if you look at it this way, it's legal, and I'm not going to, you know, pass judgment on it one way or another.
But in some ways, that's even kind of beside the point, whether their contributions were legal or not, because that's an issue that the tax lawyers and all that can sort out ultimately, and the IRS can investigate. That's as it should be. But I think you raised a larger point there about the Mormons suddenly feeling that, oh, well, why is everybody picking on us? Just because we raised over half of the money that went to enact Proposition 8 when we only have 2% of California's population, why is everybody picking on us? We only planned this for 10 years. Why is everybody picking on us? Well, the thing is that you were alluding to, basically, is that if you're going to take part in a public campaign, you have to expect that there's going to be a reaction. Nobody, no matter what side of the spectrum you're on, what end of the spectrum you're on, can take a position on a public issue and go out there and campaign on that issue and not expect somebody to stand up to you and tell you you're a fucking asshole, regardless of which end of the spectrum you're on. This isn't
right. And that's there, not there was a, and there was a reaction to gay marriage in California, and it was this proposition. So, you know, it shouldn't have come as a surprise. And what I thought was very interesting was that they didn't specifically say they were surprised, but that was, you know, the impression. It's just like, how could you possibly be surprised at this?
Yeah.
I think you might be surprised at sort of, it's all over the place. You know, there, not only are there protests for, you know, Mormon temples in California, but there's protests in, you know,
all over the
all
place.
Across the country.
Yeah.
You know, you might say, okay, well, we didn't quite expect this, but you expected everybody to go, oh, well, just let's go off to work. And, you know, another day at the office. That I thought was totally, totally disingenuous on the part of.
They absolutely should have expected that there would be a reaction because of what they did. To those who are more secular minded, they clearly used their tax exempt status in order to be able to raise political money for their campaign, and they had been planning this for a long time. They had planned on not being the first out of the gate because they knew that a lot of people look at them suspiciously, and they would need to be invited in by a more acceptable Christian face, like the Catholic Archbishop of San Francisco or whatever the hell he was, who invited them in quote marks. I'm doing air quotes here, because it was all planned in advance. And so when you have them doing this behind-the-scenes, underhanded organization, then that sort of raises the bar even more to people say, how dare you do this and pretend to be pure as the driven snow? You clearly are not. You were planning this for at least a decade.
Well, I'm not necessarily sure that it's sort of behind the scenes. I think you know, and anybody who didn't expect this really is not, you know, watching the ball, you know, gosh, with the Catholic Church.
Well,
know,
yeah, that's true.
But, opposed to this. I mean,
but
then,
the Mormons but raising the, $40 million was not necessarily expected. Or the depth of,
actually
the,
was,
the depth of their...
I really have to say, having, you know, read up on them and knowing how deep their pockets are, I was not surprised at that.
Well, incredibly
at all.
Rich.
In fact,
yeah.
what I was surprised at is not, oh, gee, it was $40 million. It was like, oh, gee, it was only $40 million, if you... notice yeah. the difference in tone, as in, like, yeah. you know, I'm surprised it was that little.
Yeah.
I did think it was kind of interesting now, sort of, that they won the Archbishop of San Francisco. Says, well, you know, everybody needs to calm down now, and this tone has to change. And it's sort of like...
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. And I thought that was totally disingenuous. You know, you're going to have to allow people to be angry, and then afterwards it can sort of...
It will calm down once the tide is turned and these people are put back in their place, because they've been calling the shots for a long time now. Because the fact of the matter is that even before California, the majority of states now have passed measures banning same-sex marriage. More right. of them have banned it than permit it, as a matter of fact,
right.
obviously, or permit even any recognition whatsoever. There's a few that have nothing either way so far. And... The radical right, which the Mormons have joined and Catholics have joined, want to outlaw any recognition of same-sex relationships, as they did in Florida and as they've done in other states. It's not the Mormons claim that they are opposed to same-sex marriage, but they are in favor of civil unions. Well, I don't believe them for a second. They haven't done anything to prove that. I think they're lying, quite frankly. And this battle is not going to end just because... of one ballot initiative. As a matter of fact, polls are showing that if Proposition 8 election were held again today, that it would lose overwhelmingly. And part of that is the fault of the people who were running the campaign to stop Proposition 8. They were absolutely inept
right.
and hopeless.
Well, and they, you know, it's kind of like, oh, well, this will never happen in California. Another thing which...
That was some
which I'm sort of interested in is the... and that's not so much in... It's partially in this issue, but it's sort of issues, since we're sort of talking about issues in general, and since next year that's sort of what we'll be talking about, is the notion of or sort of thinking about this in, sort of in regards to this, and, you know, domestic partners, it's marriage or it's nothing, and how we've gotten to that on a whole host of issues. And what I think back to is when I was in my early 20s, and I had the operation on my lung, and had, you know, all sorts of fun things with doctors and hospitals, and, you know, getting called up 3 days before my operation and being told, oh, well, you know, in order to have the operation, we figured out the insurance is not going to pay you 100% for the operation, so you need to come up with $2,000 or else you won't have the operation. And I sort of said, gee, do you always give people such a long time to come up with so much money? And she went, well, Irm said, and, you know, I called up my parents, and my mom said, well, we'll write a check. You know, thank God they were there, because I don't know what the hell I would have done. Maybe I could have charged it. And literally within months after my operation, my insurance company dropped me.
Mm.
And took a long time, you know, thankfully after 5 years when I could answer no to all those questions, the person who I was employed with sort of... stretched the law a little bit, and I got insurance. You know, there was at one point in time, it was like, well, if I would send them all of my records, they might insure me, and I would have to pay to have them sent. It was kind of like, well, this is a waste of time. So that's sort of my history of this. So when people are not going to compromise, and I remember something about, I think just dealing with health care. And, you know, there was some senator and some lobbyists and saying, well, you know, we shot this down, and because this was going to be, you know, terrible and awful. And you know, it maybe might have been around the time of when Clinton was doing health care. And I thought, you know, at the end of the day, senator and lobbyist, you're going to have health care. At the end, you know, for the senator, probably he and his family are going to have health care until he drops dead, and we're going to be paying for it, and the lobbyist is going to be insured as well. And so I often think that you have these people who, you know, well, we stood up for our moral principles, and they walk off into the sunset, but you know what? They're not the people who weren't insured. They're not the people who aren't, who have, you know, whatever the issue is, like, I don't have, I'm not protected. I don't have coverage. And it seems to me that the removal of sort of the elites who move things through from ordinary people of what the decisions really are, I think has not been particularly helpful. And that sometimes, you know, maybe something is better than nothing, and then you work on it. And it also seems to be sort of this notion of instant gratification all the time that we've come to rely on. Oh, I just want it. It's going to be, you know, and there's sort of like, you know, sometimes it's hard work. Sometimes you're going to get punched in the gut. Sometimes you're going to lose. Sometimes you're going to be challenged, and you're going to have to work really hard. And there are some times that you're going to have to go, okay, we can get something. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that this in the marriage, you know, because there's the marriage debate, the domestic partner debate, but there is also this big thing with, you know, healthcare about, you know, single payer, not a single payer. And at least with healthcare, there are more and more people who are uninsured.
Mm.
You know, I read something about, I'm reading a book on the Marshall Plan, and they were talking about Truman introducing, you know, like his State of the Union address, and talked about healthcare coverage half a century ago. And how far have we come? Zero, the big empty set. You know, we were doing Venn diagrams, our big circles wouldn't match, they wouldn't overlap. And that's because of this. You know, I mean, that's, I'm oversimplifying somewhat, but it's the whole notion of we won't compromise at all. And we stood up for our values. And at the end of the day, these people aren't directly affected. You know, it's somebody in, you know, Dubuque.
Well, yeah, and that's been the case with many of the big issues of the day. And I think it was what Barack Obama was trying to get at in his acceptance speech when he was talking about, you know, there's disagreements on all these issues, but surely there's a middle ground somewhere on these issues. And that's what he, in the context of marriage, that's what he was trying to say, that he personally, obviously, is opposed to same-sex marriage. But he said that, you know, surely there can be no objection to allowing a partner to visit their partner in the hospital. Right. And I understand that, and I do appreciate the sentiment, but I reject it utterly because it's not good enough to say, well, we might possibly, perhaps, maybe allow you to go visit your partner in the hospital. That's just not good enough. And I'm not willing to compromise on that sort of thing. Here's my main problem, and you and I have disagreements on this, but this is actually a good point to bring up in passing, that even though Jason and I have been friends for years,
you know, it's almost 40.
It'll be 40 years next year.
Yeah.
But we don't always agree on everything.
I'm always right, but
I just let him think he's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, but marriage, the problem I have is that with civil unions, even if it approximates marriage in every single thing, in every single right and privilege and so on, that's great in that state. You cross the state line and it's gone.
Right.
Completely
gone.
That's
true. That's very true.
If civil unions are going to be brought in as a separate but equal institution for same-sex couples, then it must be universal in all 50 states and the federal government.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
Because it's not the word that I'm hung up on. It doesn't have to be marriage. Sometimes I've wished that all marriages could be converted to civil unions, and that anybody who wants to have a religious marriage can go ahead and do so, and churches can be feel totally free to refuse to perform a marriage of two people if they don't want to, if they don't like the fact that a black and a white person want to marry, or two people of the same gender, whatever. I don't really care about that because I'm not interested in what religions do or don't do. I am interested, however, in the rights and privileges that government conveys.
Yeah, the huge problem is that it's used to describe something that is both religious, but that's something that is also civil.
Yes, exactly.
And governmental.
Yeah.
And even, you know, not even, you can't call it religious and secular. It's religious and civil, and it's you know, directly
they overlap
linked
too much
to the government. Right. And that's there in our Venn diagram, our two circles
But that's exactly the problem.
God, I hated that stuff. Well, yeah, see, that is the problem. And do you go about it piecemeal, and how do you know, how is it done? I think it's generational.
Yes, I would agree.
To a large extent, people are going to have to work for it. People are going to have to work for it. You know, it's for any major issue under the sun, people have had to work for it. And the whole notion of like, I think the thing, this is what gets me, and it's on a lot of issues. It's on this issue, or it's on, you know, the environment, or it's on healthcare. You know, sort of name the issue, and it's like, if we don't get it right away, we're going to take our marbles and go home. And yeah. It's like, imagine the civil rights movement if the people through the near century that it took to get civil rights had decided, oh, we're done, we didn't get our way, we're going to go home. That's sort of my thought on that. You need people who are sort of willing to take a longer view and be smart.
Yeah.
You can get mad, but you know something about don't get mad, get even. Well, here it is. Don't get mad. Let's get organized.
Well, I suppose
whatever the issue might be, let's get organized. You know, yeah. I mean, you had to finally have a gasoline at $4.30 or whatever the hell it was before people stopped driving, and then of course a massive economic meltdown to keep it going. You know, it's on that issue alone, because there was this big thing, well, gas will come down and people will start driving again, and you know they're taking the $10, which we've touched on this before. They're taking the $10 and they're buying, that way they can get a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk.
Mm.
And you might actually be able to get that for $10 in the U.S. and you maybe have, you know, a little spare change. So that's not going to change. I mean, I don't think people's driving habits are going to change. I think it's set. They're found a way to save money, but sometimes you need something catastrophic to finally come along.
Yeah.
And go, oh yeah, we should really do that, shouldn't we? I will give the bishop some of his due. This notion of demonizing the opponent, you know, you know, they're a child molester, and they're, you know, you've got to recognize there needs to be the recognition that on just about every issue, what one side says about it, that is to the extreme. There's probably somebody in there that is like that, but to label everybody that way, I think, is very foolish, especially if you're trying to win people over.
Yeah, and of course, I've actually blogged about this recently, and where it comes up for me the most is in the comments to mainstream newspapers' articles. And I'm not just talking about the extremist sites, because you expect that there. You know, if you go to Wingnut Daily or what have you, you expect to see extremist rhetoric in the comments, because that's where they all go. You know, that's where they hang out. But if you go to a mainstream newspaper or CBS or ABC, whatever, doesn't matter, and you see these people saying these absolutely bizarre things, it just, I don't know, I think some of that is the anonymity of the internet that allows people to hide these aliases and things like that, where it allows them to say things they would never say to another person's face.
I know.
But that doesn't mean that they don't believe it, just because they feel free to say it.
I also think there's a certain percentage of people that are just lobbing bombs.
Oh, absolutely. And I've also said on my blog, you can't be sure that anybody's who they say they are. Somebody who's making these extreme right-wing things might actually be a leftist, and somebody who's making these extreme left-wing arguments might actually be a right-wing nutcase. You just don't know. And that they're only there to, as you say, lob bombs and start fights and so on because they like to see the dramas. You can't take anything at face value. But the problem I have is that the vast majority of people who are in the middle of the spectrum somewhere, you know, either to the left or right of center, but basically in the middle, don't participate in the system in any of these comments and all that, because they're not on the extremes. They don't want to get in. They don't want to be victimized by these bullies, because most of them are bullies.
Because of the exact same thing that we talked about. We had this big issue in the area in which I live in Washington, D.C., about whether it was going to be a historic district. And if you become a historic district, there are limitations on what you can do to remodel your house.
Mm.
You know, there are certain standards that have to be maintained. And I remember going and just sort of asking a very, it was a public meeting, and they asked my question. You know, you write it out on cards, and it was like, you know, okay, I want to get a satellite dish. Can I get a satellite dish? And then somebody reacted like, oh, what a stupid blah, blah. I'm just like, thinking like, boy, I was sort of on the fence about the historic district, but I think I'm against it now because I was just called an idiot. I mean, I thought it was a legitimate question. You know, this is something that's on the outside of your house. It could be literally on, depending on which direction your house faces. I've seen people that sort of have it, you know, I don't have a, you know, sort of on the front porch roof. Well, if you're having this historic district, what governs that? Certainly that's changing the look of the building.
Mm.
You know, and so that was the whole point. I was just thinking like, yeah, and I was on a, you know, a listserv, and the discussion just got ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, well, you're for, you know, having 100-story condominiums in the area. It's like, no, nothing can be taller than the Washington Monument. Yeah. And then somebody else about, you know, you just want this. And it was just like, God. And again, it was, I was waiting for, I'm rubber, you're glue. You know,
yeah.
And then you had a lot of people who commented like, this is silly, this is ridiculous, I'm done.
Yeah.
And so, and those are the people who you sort of need to be involved in the process to make the difference. So if they drop out, and we had this discussion before about the election, then you have the left and the right.
Screaming at
each
other.
And they scream at each other and nothing gets done.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I've blogged in something related to that about the atheist sign in Washington State, which actually the same sign is in several other states, but Bill O. the Clown only chose to pick on the one in Washington for some reason. I don't know why, but anyway. And how the sign that the atheists put up, well, I mean, it expressed their viewpoint. They're certainly entitled to express their viewpoint. I don't have any problem with it, except for the last sentence talked about the evils of religion. And I thought that that was unnecessarily confrontational.
Right. Right.
And you mentioned actually atheists earlier and how they will very often say really anti-religious things. Well, the majority of Americans are, how do I want to put this? They are sort of de facto religious people. They think right. They are anyway. They feel they are. Whether right. They ever go to church or not is completely beside the point. I'm just saying right. that's how they perceive themselves. And you're not going to win people over to the cause of atheism by calling them calling them names, basically.
Well, it's my mother's adage, you know, we don't call our brother stupid, even if he is. And again, and it's like, you know, how it's totally unnecessary.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're reacting to somebody else's post, it's like, well, you know, you need to rise above it. Especially if you're the minority, you have to be bigger than everybody else to show you are bigger than everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, I read some of those comments, you know, not the comments you're talking about, but similar comments. It's just like, totally unnecessary. Just totally, totally unnecessary.
Yeah.
You know, oh, you're stupid and your ideas are dumb. And like I said earlier, that's a great way to win friends and influence people. Yeah, you're so right. I'm stupid. My ideas are dumb. I'm going to come over to your side. Probably not going to happen.
Yeah, and what I actually see on the right, beyond mere name-calling, which, I mean, both sides do, but the right is especially good at name-calling, is they will use these dismissive phrases like, do some research. Well, what an incredibly dumb thing to say. What you've basically done is you just said that your opponent is ignorant and stupid. And you don't have any grounds to say that. Just because you don't agree with them on what they're saying doesn't mean that they're stupid or ignorant or need to do research. It means that they see things differently than you do. And their right. opinion is valid. It may be wrong, but it's valid. And you don't go right. around attacking the people, well, it shouldn't anyway.
Yeah, their level, I will agree with you on this, that the right is much, much more vicious.
Yeah. And I don't get it.
Oh, I get it.
Well, I think it's a calculated political move, to be honest.
Well, I think it's a calculated political move as well, but I also think it's fear.
Yeah.
Their time has come, and now it's going.
Yeah.
It's about a quarter of a century since Ronnie, and it's you know, this
all their day is done.
We're still you know, right of center. We're still not right of center, and they talk to all these, you know, like gay adoption and gay marriage and a couple of other issues. And see that still shows it's just like, no, it doesn't. Mm. That's last gasp.
Yeah, and of course, we've talked about this before, but the Republican Party has become the captive of the Christian right, you know, the far right of the Christian, Christianist, I call it, establishment. And the true conservatives really have nowhere to go right now. Some of them are libertarian, but some of them just kind of whatever.
It's a very white, it's very old, and it's very Southern.
And male. Yeah. But you know, we touched earlier about this whole fad that the right is going through right now, particularly the Christianist right, in blaming, claiming, I should say, to be victims. And I put that again in quote marks because they're certainly not victims. A lot of it has to do with this Proposition 8 response. They're claiming all sorts of violence and intimidation that simply isn't true. just as a little aside, one of their favorite things is the lady with the styrofoam cross. They say that gay people ripped it out of her hands and stomped it on the ground and home. She was a victim. Well, she wasn't a victim. She was an instigator. She had shown up at this thing, which she knew was a protest thing of angry people, deliberately to try to inflame the situation. Where she was standing originally wasn't getting her the reaction she wanted. She saw where the podium was, and so she charged through the crowd. She knocked over a disabled man, trampled him in order to get into the middle of things, and it was then that the crowd reacted and took this styrofoam cross from her hand and stomped it. Now, granted, I don't think that was the best thing to do.
No.
However, she instigated it.
Right.
You can't separate those two things, happened and how it got there.
If she'd stayed where she was and then someone had come along and done that to her, then you could say, okay, yeah. But
And the same thing is true with these church protests. It's perfectly legitimate to protest outside churches. I have a real problem with people disrupting church services and going inside the churches to do their protests. But that's been remarkably rare. Considering the provocation, I would say that the protesters have been really restrained. There's been no violence. The right wing has been bringing out white powders that have been mailed to governors. And they assume that our side is responsible for it with no evidence whatsoever.
Well, right.
And the same thing true now with this Bible church burning in Wasilla, Alaska. The right wing is blaming the gays for it, or possibly liberals in general, but the gays specifically. Again, with absolutely not a shred of evidence, they've decided that that's the cause. And it's all got to do with this well, some people call it a meme, but this propaganda that they've been putting out, that they are the victims, that, oh, poor, pitiful us, we're the victims. But as we've already talked about, how easily they can raise big piles of money to throw at election campaigns or whatever it is they want to do, they're hardly victims.
Well,
as somebody who knows plenty of victims, I find that deeply offensive that they would do
on
that.
On a basic and more fundamental level, excuse the use of that word, is when they constantly go along, what this Rick Warren, who I, you know, everyone's, oh, and he's so different, and he's, you know, he's this great, and he's so outgoing, and blah, blah, blah. And it's, you know what? At the end of the day, he uses the same rhetoric. It's changed slightly, and he talks about, oh, people of faith believe this.
Yep.
Which directly implies that if you don't believe the way I do, you're not a person of faith. You're not a person of moral values.
Yep.
And they've used this trick, you know, it was Christians 20 years ago, it was something else like 10 years ago, and now it's people of faith. Well, you know, there are plenty of people of faith that don't necessarily agree with what Rick Warren talks about. And that's, to me, is the thing that just annoys the hell out of me when all these sort of mainstream media people, it's like, oh, he's different. It's like, no. Hmm. And this is my, I guess it's my metaphor. I'm not implying that this is what it is, but this is sort of my extreme thing here. This is my I'm rubber, you're glue moment. you know, if you get, if someone shoves a knife into your stomach with a scowl or a smile, it's, you know, do it with a scowl, you know, it's still a knife in your gut. And if they do it with a smile, you know what? It's still a knife in your gut.
Hmm.
And no one, and the thing that I always find interesting is nobody challenges him on that language.
Yeah.
You know, to say, okay, well, what do you mean? You know, and it's like, if you added a modifier, you know, people of my faith, or the people who I interact with, you know, this is what, how we believe, but there isn't that modifier. And that's, that's deliberate.
Yeah, the right-wing Christians always claim to be speaking on behalf of all people of faith. And I'm quite sure that I know more than a handful of people of faith who would be deeply offended to have that person speaking for them. You know, the things that they say, the hate that they spill, and...
Well, and I will add one more thing. Part of that problem is that the people who have differing views do not speak loudly
exactly.
enough and
yep.
call them on it.
I've said that repeatedly. I mean, who is it? It was Edmund Burke who said the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good people to do nothing. Well, that's true with religious people as well. You know, if the real Christians keep quiet and the only people you ever hear from are the far right extremes, well, guess what becomes the de facto definition of what a Christian is?
I wouldn't even necessarily have to call them real Christians, but it's like some other voice. And the media always, you know, I don't know, ABC ran some sort of thing, and you know, and they would have this, you know, Views of America or something, and all the religious ones were all these right wing or right of center religious groups, and I'm thinking like, you couldn't find a United Church of Christ anywhere, I guess,
yeah.
or
Quakers,
you know,
Unitarians.
There weren't, yeah, none of them. So that's because they make good copy, you know.
Well, the media thrives on conflict. You know, it's what sells papers. It's what gets ratings in TV shows when people are screaming at each other. When people have a reasoned debate, a reasoned discussion, then it doesn't get anywhere. And religious people won't debate each other. So God forbids, if you'll excuse the expression, you should ever see the Rick Warrens and Mike Huckabees of the world taking on whoever their counterparts are on the left. I can't even name a single left
wing. You can't even name one.
Not one.
That's
and I know they're out there. I know that there are plenty of them. John Spong, I believe his name was, a now retired Episcopalian bishop, was one of them. Well, all of this, of course, is being played out in the background, with the background of the financial crisis that's going on. And one of the things I thought was the funniest thing I'd heard in recent weeks was when Barney Frank was, I don't even know who he was speaking to, but he was making a speech and said that Barack Obama said we only have one president at a time. I think he's overestimating the number of presidents we have at the moment.
Yeah, it was on 60 Minutes last night.
Yeah, I thought that was hilarious. Because George Bush couldn't possibly care less about what's going on now.
Well, and it's his, you know, sort of exit. And it would be a victory lap, except there's nothing really to celebrate about, you know, well, you know... the things on Wall Street, and I'm really sorry about the what's happened to people 401k and whatnot. But you know these things on Wall Street. This was like a decade ago. It's like, oh, we're blaming Bill Clinton.
Well, actually, he's blaming his father, because he talked in the original thing. He said 10 years before he took office, which would have been when his father was president.
No, that's true. And these things happen, and there was let's get you know, people into homes, and there were abuses, but. Under his watch, from what is now becoming very apparent, there were lots of people, or not lots of people, but there were important people who did not tend to panic and were fairly well respected, saying, "Here is the problem." And now we're, you know, going through the subprime, and now next year and into 2011, we're going to go into the adjustable arms. Which is the next wave, and they have not done. They have, I think, a huge mistake by Paulson was this: like, let's shovel money, okay, with no oversight and no sort of like rules on how they were going to spend it. You know, Capital One bought my bank and put up like $500 million of their own dollars and like $2.3 billion from the bailout funds, and I'm thinking like. How are you lending to people with this?
Yeah.
And that's what needs to be done. And what I think they need to start looking into is how they are going to refinance this, how they're going to or help people refinance so that it brings down the rates. And it's not just new houses. It's people who are
already in houses. Yeah.
Who are already in their houses. If we're going to have all these people be unemployed, what do you do?
Well, the whole bailout thing was set up wrong from the beginning, because basically it wasn't a bailout, it was a handout. The
right.
the Treasury handed over all of this money to private banks with no strings attached to speak of, and the taxpayer gets nothing in return. As a matter of fact, I remember Paulson standing up there and making a point of saying, as if it was some sort of virtue, that the taxpayers would not have voting representation on the board of directors. Well, why the hell not? You know, we've just given them billions of dollars, and we get no say in what the bank does? What on earth are they thinking? As private citizens, they would never agree to that kind of absurdity, which is what has led a lot of critics to say this was not, as people were saying before the election, it was not a government takeover of the banks. It was a banking takeover of the U.S. Treasury, because essentially that's what happened. They get all of this money with no strings attached, no real benefit for the taxpayer, except that the banks don't collapse just yet. And that's it.
Well, the problem with that, in which they have to be careful about, and which they're not smart enough to be careful about, is people's reaction, because you're not going to have somebody who's going to coddle you in about a month.
Yeah.
And there will be the ability to go after them, and they're simply not smart enough.
Yeah.
You know, they're the captains of industry in all this, and I think a lot of it is just sheer dumb luck.
But you know, were saying
in my next life, I want to come back as a weatherman or an economist, because you can always be wrong and keep your job.
But you know, something you were saying earlier, you were talking basically about how all of this stuff was going on while Bush was president, and he's of course not trying to duck responsibility. But I mean, even things like this $50 billion fraud, if his regulators had been doing their jobs, it would have been detected. I mean, they had whistleblowers who were saying, look, this isn't right. And his people chose to do nothing again. So, I mean, it's just another in a series of scandals that this administration has unleashed on the American public, which makes it even all the more ironic now that they are working furiously to try to recast the Bush administration as being something other than the greatest failure in American history.
Yes, it's interesting. Revisionist history even before they're out the door. We would never have gone to war with Iraq if the intelligence had been right. At least, as much as I despise Dick Cheney, he at least had the balls to say, no, I don't, that's not correct.
I saw an interview with him on ABC today. Well, it was
I had to change the channel. I can't watch him.
Well, I wasn't really paying that much attention, because he's such an arrogant prick that I really couldn't care less what he has to say about anything. But I was watching him, and I thought to myself, he doesn't look well. He looks incredibly drawn. I don't think he's going to live long after he gets out of office.
You kind of wonder what the portrait in his attic looks like. But,
his skin looked very good. I'll give him that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's very, you know, the failures are on such a massive scale.
Yeah. Unprecedented.
Afghanistan. Oh, remember that, which now looks like it's about ready to blow up.
Yeah.
Iraq.
Yeah,
you know, we let a major city in the United States of America be destroyed, and the economic crisis, and then just all sorts of things. It's just a huge, long list, and
fundamentally changing the character of what America is by shredding the Constitution, essentially, by repealing habeas corpus, which has been around for over 800 years, by changing American policy to make America a nation that tortures people when it never used to. I mean, all of the crimes that this administration has done, I just wish there was some way that they could serve some prison time for what they've done.
Which I've just said before, all of that is terrible and awful, but as far as I'm concerned, the single worst thing that they did, and it's almost to my way of thinking, it's practically treason, is they took a threat to this country, a legitimate threat, which is Al-Qaeda and terrorism. These are horribly bad people who are going, if they have their way, are going to do horribly bad things to us. And didn't use that to unite this country. They used it as a wedge to try and create a permanent Republican majority politically. And that is inexcusable.
Yeah,
imagine Franklin Roosevelt doing that.
No.
Imagine Woodrow Wilson doing that. You know, I mean, just go back, you know, it just totally
Which is, it's probably why it's not all that surprising that Karl Rove, who was trying to create this permanent Republican majority, is now behind the moves to try to recast the entire Bush administration.
You mean Mr. Potato Head, as I believe John Stewart always calls him. I think that's quite funny.
Well, I just can't see how it ultimately can succeed, because now, I mean, Bush is reviled in pretty much all corners of America except for the real, true, hardcore, rock-ribbed believers who would never consider anything but a George Bush Republican kind of thing. So when you're so universally despised, as well as throughout the world, how can Rove think, that anything that they say or do now will change anything or change people's perceptions? He's going to go down in history as the worst president ever. There's just nothing that they can do now that will change that. His legacy is going to be one of utter, total, complete failure, and I would tend to agree with you, treason.
So, yeah, it'll be an interesting post-presidency, and I think there'll be more shoe incidents. Well, or something like it.
I think the world is throwing collective shoes at this point.
But anyway, I mean, but there's hope around the corner, and it's going to be, you know, better no matter what.
Yes.
With Barack Obama and the 25 million people that are going to be here on Inauguration Day, or how many... I bet I could still rent out my house.
The 3.4 billion people on the...
Yes. Take them 20 years to get out of there. Yeah, you know, there are all these, like...
we're going to put on extra trains.
Yeah, well, they're talking about it, after the festivities, it could take 8 hours for people to get off the mall. I'm thinking, I'm walking home, but of course, that's the whole notion that everybody's going to leave all at once, and that's not going to happen.
Now, some people stick around. They'll have food vendors and things, won't they? I hope.
I'm not sure how they're going to do that. I have heard from somebody that they're not going to allow strollers or backpacks.
That wouldn't surprise me.
I'm not exactly sure where that is. So I'm thinking I'm taking my winter coat, and in one pocket's going to be my digital camera, and the other pocket's going to be my video camera, and then I'll take a bottle of water in the other, and maybe I'll have to wear pants with lots of pockets so I can bring along like a Nutri-Grain bar or something. So it should be interesting. It should be several people say, are you going to go down? I said, I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Well, no, if I lived there, I'd be there in a heartbeat.
I can hardly wait. It's just going to be a crazy, nutty week. It's just going to be so amazing. So it should be truly amazing event, truly historic.
Yeah. And, of course, we're going to be podcasting again before that and then after that, but not at that time, because I will be otherwise engaged at... on Inauguration Day.
Because it's the 21st in New Zealand.
It is. And that's my birthday!
Woo! Yep. Yep, can apply for that AARP care and Medicaid. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud?
Well, Nigel, the love of my life, sent me an email yesterday for a website for 50-plus vacations. I thought that was so nice of him to do that.
Well, maybe you'd have to remind him that maybe he'll have to be carded if he can get a beer someplace. Well, they never did that in New Zealand, did they? Oh, well.
Yeah.
Well, again, Bush is on the way out, and there is just a tremendous amount of optimism and hope, and it should be just an amazing... I have to say, and I know I've said this before, I really did not think I would ever see this in my lifetime.
No, me neither.
You know, and it's just going to be... astounding. I am just so excited about it. I remember voting. He says, okay, I'm going to look at this for a really, really long time. And I did my vote, and I just, you know, I was just like, hey, just take this in. This is history. I would love to have had a camera and taken a picture of the ballot, but...
some people did.
Yes, some people did. Yeah, I've seen posts of people, but it was just like,
I've seen
like,
plenty of
wow,
people who wrote about it, and they were talking about getting a bit verklempt when they were casting their vote.
I got very verklempt. It was like, okay, this is... crying in public, that would be really bad, but it was just like, wow, this is just...
Yeah.
So...
Because I did mine a few days after the video that I posted, because that video was with a temporary ballot, but as it happens, a few days later, the permanent one arrived. And I voted that one in complete secrecy. Nobody was in the house at the time, except for Jake. But even I was getting a bit worked up, and that was when was that? Geez, that was a long time before the actual election. It was
right. That was like 6 weeks.
Wasn't something like that. But anyway. Well, to wrap up the year, why don't we go over the comments from the last episode, which was the 20th of November, I think it was, or 18th or whatever. Is episode 129, which was the first that we could tolerate talking about it after the elections were finally over. We talked about amending the Constitution, and we sort of muddled it up quite accidentally. And so the first comment actually relates to that, and it's from Roger Green, who said, 38 states needed to pass a constitutional amendment. This is a quote now. Once proposed, whether submitted by Congress or by a national convention, amendments must then be ratified by three-fourths of the state to take effect. The two-thirds you were thinking of refers to the members of the House and Senate necessary to get it out of the states. And I replied immediately. I said, you are correct, Roger. Three-quarters of the states must ratify an amendment either through their legislature or state convention, Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution. Mm-hmm. However, two-thirds of the states can propose an amendment. Things just got all muddled up. Speaking only for myself, I blame CRS, which, of course, was can't remember shit.
Well, and then there's no time limit.
Yes.
On how long, because there was something about congressional pay raises, which took like 30 years to finally get passed.
Well, the one about raising within a term was proposed something like 100 and some odd years before.
Okay, then that's the one that I'm talking about.
Unless Congress places a deadline on it like they did with the Equal Rights Amendment.
Rights Amendment, right.
It can just sort of stick around forever, pretty much. But Roger also posted a secondary comment that says, oh, I'm not feeling all that post-racial America yet. Folks are going out and buying more guns, and I'm afraid that some of them plan to use them. And he's a link to a post on his blog, which, by the way, is one of the most interesting blogs that I've run across. It's very eclectic, and I quite enjoy that. But I said, I completely agree with you. I don't think America is post-racial, not even close. Yeah, post-racial, by the way, is in quotes. I think that the country has taken a great leap forward through the election of Obama, but the real hope, as it always is with children and young people who are far less racist, sexist, and homophobic than their parents. And they're the hope that the country will get closer to that time without all the evil isms. That's really what we were trying to get at, I think, when we were talking about post-racial stuff.
I think that's true. And if he's in for 8 years, you're going to have people, kids who are in their formative years, growing up under an African-American president, and it'll just be like, well, yeah, sure.
And with quite an interesting cabinet so far. I mean, this has got to be the first time that a Nobel laureate has been proposed to be a cabinet secretary, surely. I'm not aware of it being done before.
Yeah, no, I can't think of any either.
And for energy, I mean, what a brilliant move. But anyway.
Yes.
The next two comments I didn't reply to in writing, and the first was from Anne, who said, time will tell, but it's really two countries. U.S., of course, is really two countries. It's very hard to tell from New Zealand, but from my 3 weeks back in the U.S. in September, it seemed worse off than when I left in early 06. Tensions were higher, and not just because of the election. Religion seemed to be even more influential than before. I could not find an FM station where they weren't forever talking about how blessed they were or ranting on about how rotten everyone else was, other than NPR. I did spend some time looking, too, driving back and forth between Chicago and the East Coast. I, too, was very, very happy that the blue country won this time, but there are tons of homeschooled younger people who have no clue what the real world is like or how to function within it, and many of them are now young adults. What will they teach their own children? And I share those concerns, but I think what we were just talking about these young people whose formative years will be spent with an African-American president is a sign of hope. And the fact that even those ones who are now young adults who were homeschooled, they're still going to be living in a world where the president of the United States is an African-American, and that's going to change their perceptions in ways that they can't even begin to imagine yet, I don't think.
I also think that the red state, blue state divide is slightly overplayed.
Yeah. I mean, most states are a bit more purple, if anything.
Well, I think it's overplayed. You know, there are in every single, I would have to assume, in every single liberal state, there are conservative areas. Yep. And in every single conservative state, there are liberal areas. And I think that this is from the media, because it's easy and simple.
Yeah, I agree completely.
And in the age where they have to be careful of their budgets, it's just simple to do. I mean, after all, Nebraska was a a red state, but there was that one congressional district that went for Obama. Okay, yeah. So yeah. Because they did theirs proportionately. Anyway.
Yeah, well, I agree, and I think it, you're right that it's about it's easier for the media too. But the last comment was from John Q. Public, who said, "I think you both take the high road regarding the lack of African-American support for Prop 8. I still can't get past the fact that they didn't consider this a civil rights issue. Even though, as Dan Savage said, losing Prop 8, this is a quote, took the buzz of Obama winning, I still believe that one of many reasons for voting for Obama was that we have to get past racial divide in some way, and surely he is our best hope." And he's actually sort of reinforcing what we were just saying about how, in that sense, at least, Obama's a sort of a transformative figure because it will change the way that people perceive race and power and all those kinds of things in ways that they can't even begin to imagine yet. But I understand where John's coming from, and a lot of people have been critical of African-Americans. But what I come back to again is the relatively low numbers of African-American voters in California, and the fact that most of them are white, and the fact that it's certainly true that there should have been more outreach to African Americans, but we have a larger issue with African Americans than just Prop 8, because there are many otherwise perfectly moderate, even, let alone liberal, African American people who don't perceive gay and lesbian rights as a civil rights issue. They're actually offended by that, which is something that the fundamentalists, particularly Mike Huckabee, have been playing up lately. Right. And I've blogged about that as well. I've blogged about all this shit lately. But I go back to what I've said before. I think the larger problem was that the people who were opposing Prop 8 ran an inept campaign.
Right.
You cannot run a campaign that's about gay people and pretend they don't exist. And that issue was about gay people. It wasn't about fairness and all those sorts of things that the people were saying. I mean, it was. But at the end of the day, what people saw was gay marriage, and they shouldn't have been afraid of that. The reason the Briggs Initiative lost 30 years ago was because Harvey Milk put gay people front and center of that campaign. And well, that's what Prop 8 should have done.
Yeah, that's very true. But I think they ran a really bad campaign.
Absolutely.
They ran a really bad campaign because from the other side of the other side of the country, it just seemed sort of like, well, it'll just lose. And that was just sort of the expectation, and it's like, no. You know, you can sort of blame, well, you know, it's that group. No, at some point in time, it's you didn't run a good campaign. You know, it's Barack Obama ran an excellent campaign, and John McCain ran a really lousy campaign.
Yeah.
I mean, Obama won because of that.
Yeah.
And if McCain had run a better campaign, the results might have been different. Thank God it wasn't. But
if he'd been a better candidate.
Right.
If he'd been the real John McCain and not whoever that weirdo was out on the campaign trail.
Exactly. Yes. That's exactly true. So.
But anyway. Well, those are all of the comments from the last episode. And by all means, always feel free to leave a comment on the show notes, or can send an email or ring the listener line, and all those details, of course, will be as usual at the end of this episode. But that is it for this year's efforts. We'll be back in the new year with more.
Happy holidays. Oh, I'm sorry. Merry Christmas. Holidays. Happy New Year.
Happy holidays. We don't know when precisely because we haven't worked that out yet, but it'll be sometime before Inauguration Day, but after New Year's Day. That narrows it down considerably.
Yes.
Oh, it's about
when all six of our brain cells are working together at the same time, we'll figure these things out.
Yes, my increasingly aging brain cells. There's about a two-week spread in there, so somewhere in there. And then we'll take it from there. But we expect to have some big announcements and some different things in the new year, so that's something to look forward to. Well, at least for us, anyway.
Yes.
Listener mileage may vary.
It's always all about us.
Of course it is. That's the whole point of podcasting, isn't it?
That's very true.
But I'd like to thank everybody for listening to these discussions over the past year. It's been great fun to do. We've enjoyed it.
Yes.
And sort of in a way, we're letting you in our little world because we've been doing this for the better part of years. We don't want to think too much about
the
numbers.
Since George McGovern ran for the presidency.
Before that. Richard Nixon was still president.
Well, I know.
The first term.
Really, political really started.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
You know, and the poll that we took at the junior high school we were
yes.
in.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Yes.
All right. You can find my charming comments. I'm going to give myself a plug here.
As
at Jason's View from DC.blogspot.com.
And there is a link on my blog, and there will be one in the show notes. As I've said before, I don't yet have access to the blog rolling to fix the links on the podcast site. But I hope to soon. But there will, of course, be a link in the show notes. But do check out Jason's blog, of course. And, of course,
yes.
Go to amarinspodcast.com to leave your comments and suggestions or whatever. Bouquets, brickbats, we don't mind. We're not picky.
Yep.
Although, anyway. I was just going to say, in light of what we've said about people making outrageous comments, maybe you should be careful, but I don't really care. Say whatever you want.
No, we don't care at all.
Yeah,
that's what the delete key is for, after all.
Absolutely.
That's another thing that I don't like. It's like, you know, oh, I'm so offended. It's just like, then go on. Press delete. Go, you know, do page down.
Yeah.
You know, do the arrow, whatever.
That's what I usually do. I always go, yeah, whatever. And go on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Roll my eyes, go on to the next one. But anyway, thanks again for joining us this year, everyone, and we'll be back in the new year. Bye.
Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amarins Podcast at amarinspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at arthur@amarinspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. listener line on 206-339-8413. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.